Hi, Ed and Lisa Young here for the Creative Marriage Podcast, where we talk about the greatest thing around marriage, because marriage can be great and God wants it to be great if we're willing to work. Today, we're part two of this interview we're having with Brad and Melissa Stovall. They're phenomenal people. They have a great, great family. Like many of us, though, they brought issues and they brought a lot of differences from their family of origin, personalities, traits, aptitudes, abilities to the table. What do you do when you're like, is this a mismatch or what? Because I would say all of us in a way are mismatched. So tell us a little bit about how you guys met, because that's a story that everyone loves to hear. Love is in the air. I mean, how did you?
Well, can I just quickly before you tell how you met? Our last episode, we went over just a little bit of the background where Melissa came from a very abusive family. Her dad was an addict of many different substances and was
violent
and all of that. Her mom had come from an addictive background. So it was just very dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. And then Brad also had just an early introduction to alcohol from a very, you know, questionable that your mom and dad just saying, here, try it so that you won't drink. And then it ended up backfiring and all that. So there's a lot of stuff that came together. But tell us how you met.
I remember seeing Brad here at church during one of the Sunday school classes, and he was volunteering. And at that point, I think in my new walk with Christ, I was just trying not to focus on guys, but he caught my eye.
Oh, he's Brad's handsome. Look at him.
Look at that.
Look at that, man. Brad, you are.
Thank you.
And so, but that's great if you see somebody and you think, oh, okay, he caught my eye, but how did there a connection come?
Well, so for me at the time, because of being a part of the church for a little bit longer than she was, I was a part of a home team. And
which like is a small, like a small group. Group. Yeah, small kind group. Of Bible study thing. Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And I was leading it or co-leading it with someone. And I'd always tried to, you know, again, two parts of all of us, I'd said, you know, I will never date any girl that comes to our home team. And for whatever crazy reason, Melissa had emailed several, you know, inquiries, and this was the time before email was really something you could just do on your phone. So I missed it. And she went and joined someone else's home team. And so she's over there doing her thing. And then we bring our two home teams together and I see her for the first time.
Whoa.
And so this is coming, you know, from y'all's leadership with teaching is watch, you know, don't just rush into things. And so for several months, I just continued to watch her to see if she was going to stay plugged in, and she did. And she just had a genuine heart that was just, she was always helping others. When I would stand and watch, she was always doing something. She had action to it. She was going and helping people, you know, with chairs or whatnot. It was just always something. She wasn't standing around and she was always doing something, which caught my eye. So I continued to watch. And then we went camping as a home team, and then we just were able to sit together one night, and it just all of a sudden we knew each other, felt the same. So we continued to pursue the relationship.
And fast forward, you get married. You have three amazing children. Let's see, Sarah is the oldest, then Ryan and Cody. So you're doing this family thing. And Brad, you're talking about being a part of a home team. It was very important that you saw that Melissa was the real deal when it came to her walk with Christ. But what was going on behind the scenes when you talk about the duplicity of living? Because we saw firsthand how you were serving in the church. You were faithful coming to the church. You were very much a part. You were someone who people looked to for wisdom because you did depend on God's word for guidance. But yet there was another side.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately for Melissa, she didn't know about it, but, you know, I was still doing drugs at the time Melissa and I were starting to date. And so I looked like a really good, you know, boyfriend because I would always go somewhere. When she needed something, I was gone because it allowed me the opportunity to go get high. And so, you know, for the very first part of our dating and even into our marriage, for whatever reason, you know, I believe, you know, for whatever God would do deals. And so I was always working out these deals with God. And one of those deals was when Sarah was born, because we had both had, you know, a troubled past. We both did have an abortion. And so when Sarah was born, it was just like some type of, okay, we're forgiven. And so I said, I'm not doing drugs anymore. And that's when the drinking became obvious, because I didn't hide the drinking and I didn't have the drugs anymore. So I just stayed at home and drank. And that's where Melissa, you know, started to go, what's going on? And I was constantly trying to buy her stuff. And that was part of the friction, is she wouldn't drink. She would drink half of, you know, something and set it down. And for those of us that really understand alcoholism, once we start, we don't stop. And it would just be frustrating, because I'm like, she grew up in the same type of tumultuous, you know, she had a bad father, her mother was, you know, whatever you would want to call that. And it was just like, why does she not need to escape? I didn't understand. Why does she not need to go numb? Because that's all I ever wanted, was just forget it. And so it was interesting as we, you know, traversed through that first part of it, where she was just consistently, you know, staying true. And it was pretty interesting because of all of her past, and she's supposed to be, you know, the newbie. Here she is doing the things the right way. And here I am pushing up against those things, constantly trying to break her. And that's what I did, is I was trying to break her.
But addiction is very complicated. And Ed and I have shared our story with a daughter that had an addiction. And there are chemical things going on in your brain, in your body, that it's just complicated. And I'm not making excuses, but I'm just saying that until you come to terms with, I am an addict, which is the basics of the 12-step program, it's next to impossible to rise up out of it. Mm-hmm. So at what point, you know, you had Sarah, then you had Ryan and Cody, at what point did all of this kind of come to a head?
You want to take that one?
I think for me, because when we were dating, there was, you know, the occasional drink every now and then. And then, boom, I'm pregnant. We were 3 months into our marriage. Both having that in our history, we weren't sure, you know, was God going to even bless us with children? So 3 months in, you know, the party stopped for me, right? Yeah. So I, you know, now, you know, I've got a baby growing in me, you know, just my season changed. And he was still, you know, having fun over there by himself. So there was a lot of resentment coming into that. So I had to, you know, step into being a mom, and that's a completely different role. One, a wife, and then a mom, and then dealing with, you know, trying to wrangle him in, like, come on, this is not what I thought we were walking into together. So I had a very different picture in my mind on what our marriage was going to look like. So that was...
I know.
So after Cody was born, that was our third child, it became obvious that I was going to have to get involved, because Melissa, up to that point, was able to manage, you know, and keep everything. And, you know, we were talking about with the addiction and whatnot, is we talk about insanity, and we have to come to a point where we realize we're insane. And I was not. I did not believe I was insane. I didn't believe my life was unmanageable. But that's the hardest thing that I do deal with people today, is to break them down.
But you were a functioning alcoholic, highly functioning. And so what Melissa experienced at home with Brad is not the same Brad that everyone else experienced. Your work ethic, your drive, your clear thinking were pretty much impeccable in that regard. So there was two different, again, you're talking about the duplicity, but to realize that you could not function like this anymore. What drove you to a 12-step program?
I think for me, it was an ultimatum. I think, you know, at that time I was working here at the church, and Melissa and you guys had said, Brad, you know, it's going to be one or two ways. You know, you're either going to come along and do things the right way, or if you want to continue to do things your way, you're going to have to go do those on your own. And I felt it was real. I think, you know, at that time, I really believed Melissa had enough. And I had pushed her to the point, but I really wasn't done. I was just trying to convince everybody else that, you know, it wasn't as bad as everybody thought it was, that I was still not what, you know, everybody was saying I was. And that's just, I don't understand how to get people to get there. It's only through God. Yes, and that's what we say. And, you know, that's, we can get into the serenity prayer about the things that we can control and the things we can't. But I think until you can get brutally honest, and that's the one thing about, you know, we call it a step four in the program, but it's an inventory. Is where you go through your life, and, you know, we talk about resentments, we talk about fear, and then we talk about our sexual inventory. And when you go through those and you're really honest about it, my step four part, of course, is I did it and my sponsor sent me back. And he said, this is great, Brad. You blamed your parents for this. You blamed your, you know, your brothers for that. You blamed your wife for this. how about where's your part? And he had me go through it the second time, and it became very clear to me that that was an issue. It really changed my life. But I still, you know, was not thoroughly convinced that I was the problem. And I would say for everybody, you have to hit a rock bottom. And I know there was a morning I, you know, told Melissa I was leaving. I was going to go to Montana. I was out. And, you know, it just felt like that was not the right choice. And so I prayed the prayer and I said, God, show me what's supposed to happen mm-hmm. here. And when I got up, I called my sponsor and, you know, we started talking through it and it changed. And I still remember, you know, very quickly after having what we call a spiritual awakening that, the alcohol or the desire to drink alcohol was gone. And that was not something I'd ever come to know. I mean, my whole life was about, am I going to drink today? Where am I going to drink today? How do I put enough beers in the garage so she can't count them and all that fun stuff, you know, we do. And so it just, I don't know until someone hits a rock bottom and that Christ intervenes and you get that uplifting, how to explain it. Mm-hmm. It's supernatural.
So there were almost two different times, like one time that you were given an ultimatum, sure. but then, and you worked through it, but then you kind of got to where, okay, I have some understanding of what's going on, but you still weren't at that rock bottom.
Correct. Mm-hmm. It was probably about, you know, we use the term terminal uniqueness. I believe because of my past and my background, no one was like me, which is, you know, terminal. It's if you don't think there are people out there like mm-hmm. you, then you're going to struggle with revealing yourself. And so as I became more aware that this group had similarities to my personalities and I started to talk to these people and started to realize, okay, they are like me. Mm-hmm. I started to actually go, okay, well, maybe they can help me because they're telling me these things. Because at first I was like, how could you not drink? If you were like me, you would still be drinking because you don't go through life sober. And so once I recognized that there is a different way and I started to lean into them, I think it was humility. I really do. Mm-hmm. It was the first time I was teasing Melissa about it a couple of days ago. And I asked her, I said, did you not recognize when I did my step four, step five, how humble I became? And she goes, no.
if you're asking that question, that might be.
That's funny.
But that's how prideful I am. Even in my humility, I'm going to be prideful because I'm lower than you. Mm-hmm. Yay, I'm the lowest. And it's just even in that is pride because we're not the lowest. We're all in this together.
That's right.
And that's what the, you know, having people to go through life with, like y'all, mm-hmm. like Barry and these others that are doing things the right way, because as you alluded to earlier, I came from a different background and I thought it was normal. I really thought everybody's family was like this. You go outside and everybody's hugging and nice. Mm-hmm. And when you come home, put the gloves on and, you know, let's get it on. Mm-hmm. And whoever, you know, swings hardest wins. And that's yes. how the arguments went in my house is we said very hurtful things to each other just to get it done. And, you know, that's how yeah. we walked away. And that's how, you know, I treated Melissa. And that's what I think ultimately is. And I, again, not proud of anything what I'm going to say here, but I beat her down. I mean, through my pornography, through the lust, through all the addictive behaviors that I was going through. But for some reason, she stuck in it. And I think, you know, with what you guys have shared with, you know, the creative marriage, the marriage mirror, it was something that I mm-hmm. saw I'm getting out what I'm putting in.
Yes.
And I started to go, okay, if I could start to love this woman like she's loving me, you know, it might change things. And so I started to try and things started happening. And I don't know how to explain it other than it's a supernatural thing to be humble and be obedient. That's because excellent. I was not obedient.
And Brad, you know what we're saying though, what we're saying too is kind of what Lisa and we've been talking about. We have this baggage. Each of us brings the baggage and we're going through the contents. We're literally taking inventory and allowing and asking God to intervene, and we're repenting, we're turning from that, and this awakening is taking place.
Something very important to realize is that this is complicated.
Yes, it is.
This is very complicated. How do you navigate through such complicated issues as this? Issues of hurt and mm-hmm. abandonment,
yes,
and issues of addiction. How do you do that? And we'll
talk about that
in our next episode. Session, whatever you want to call it, of Creative Marriage. We're so happy that you joined us for Creative Marriage. And please, if you are so, you know, likely to do so, we would love for you to do so. Give us a 5-star rating, and that would be awesome.
And also pick up our book,
The Creative Marriage.
Creative Marriage.
Yes, because it talks about keeping your marriage alive. Mm-hmm. We'll see you next time.